Well, guys, thanks so much for indulging us in this earlier on. You know, we have, this has been the most incredible adventure for us, for me and Rachel, and we are just hugely grateful for these last 6 years. And it's been such a privilege to be part of the story of KXC and part of the journey of what God has done here. You know, you guys are so, so close to our hearts. And yeah, saying goodbye to this community is a tough thing to do. And yeah, thank you so much for the way that you've loved us, for the way you've loved our kids over these last 6 years. Couldn't have thought of a better way of living life than coming on an adventure with God, doing something you love with friends, and that's what this has been. Good. To lift the mood slightly, I just thought we'd have a bit of fun. One of the things of like stopping work at KXC is I feel like I can like let you in on a few of the kind of things that going on in the office. One of them is we have a little WhatsApp group called Office Banter. This week I was going through a couple of videos. I came across this image, which is a Pete Hughes classic. It's one of the ways I will always remember him of this. This pose in when he's about to deliver a massive line, and it's kind of like it's a sort of surprised examination of the hands that have appeared in front of him, and I posted this and it went in a different direction to what I was expecting. If you put onto the next one, Colin came straight up with that. I mean, it is uncanny, but that's good. And the eagle-eyed amongst you will also see that Pete was about 2 years ahead of me with dress sense, because I've ended up wearing the same shirt today that I think he was probably wearing then. But and then the final thing that I wanted to say about was Colin, who's our amazing Sundays coordinator and is on sound tonight. It's one of his many things that he does. He's introduced this thing for the duty person to put on their little sheet to give them lift their spirits in an evening or a morning. And this morning, Kath Carter was on duty. This was the photo that Colin put up. 50 Shades of Grey. She's our resident Aussie. Thought you might like that. So Pete asked us to speak today and essentially said, talk about the things you've been praying for over these last 6 years. There's this amazing quote that your prayers outlive you. And I really believe that. And we that's our real hope for King's Cross. The things that we've sown in prayer outlive our presence here physically. And as we've reflected and prayed on what we might talk about tonight, we felt led to speak on this particular passage. You've probably heard a talk on it more than once before if you've been around KXC for a while. Don't worry, it's not the Exodus. It's a different one from the New Testament. It's a story of an act of reckless generosity. It's a story about God's acceptance and forgiveness. It's a story about an act of seeing. Ultimately, it's a story about the person of Jesus and his interaction with an individual. And I love reading those kind of stories. You know, we're all here because we are intrigued, interested, in love with this amazing person of Jesus, the God in human form, and you know, the Bible talks about he's the image of the invisible God. If we want to know what God is like, we look at who Jesus is and the accounts that we see of Jesus in the Bible. This particular story, the setting is a meal. I love food, as you might have been able to tell from some of those pictures that came up early on. And the reason why I love food, I think, is the social side to it, as well as the taste. I love entertaining friends around the meal table. I don't know how many of you like that as well, but it's such fun. There's this whole social side to it, and there's a whole kind of set of customs around entertaining people for a meal, isn't there? If you were going to come to dinner at the kitchens, you'd probably be greeted at the door by a hug, maybe a kiss on both cheeks if you're continental type. You can get into all sorts of trouble, can't you? Just not knowing which one of those the person is. But and I regularly fail that. But hopefully I'd take their coat. I'd offer them a drink. Maybe you'd bring some flowers with you, or a bottle of wine, or a box of chocolates, or perhaps all three. And but the setting in Jesus' day, the customs in Jesus' day were different, but there were some. And in Jesus' day, you would probably be offered water and a towel, a bowl of water and a towel to wash your feet. Perhaps one of the servants would come and do it for you to get the dust off the road. You'd be given some oil to put on your head to kind of freshen you up. You'd be greeted with a kiss. And in this story, Jesus is invited to a meal and he's offered none of these normal pleasantries, normal customs of when you're invited round for a meal. The person who's invited him has deliberately given him a humiliation and set him a test to see how he'll react. So I'm going to read the passage. Let's just pray first. Jesus, I thank you that you are here tonight, and I pray, God, that you would show us who you are, Lord. Meet us as you met with the person in this passage that we're going to look at, Lord. Come and walk into this room, Lord, and speak to us. May we have a real meeting with you tonight. Amen. So, Luke 7, verse 36 to 50. I've suddenly realised it's a completely different part of the page because it's a different Bible I'm looking at. If you're following it on the Pew Bibles, it's page 1036. And if you haven't got a Bible and you'd like one, then do take one of these home. There should be on the pew around you. There are gifts to you. And we'd love to give it to you. When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. A woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's table. So she came, at the Pharisee's house. So she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner." Jesus answered him, "Simon, I have something to tell you." "Tell me, teacher," he said. "Two people owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii, the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he forgave the debts of both. Now which of them will love him more?" Simon replied, "I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven." "You've judged correctly," Jesus said. Then he turned towards the woman and said to Simon, "You see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little." So Jesus is walking into a trap set by the Pharisees. Their agenda is full of cynicism and judgment, but their agenda is about to be interrupted by somebody else, an uninvited guest. This woman whose reputation is destroyed in the town that she lives in. All that she is known for is for being somebody who's sinful. Probably she's lived her life as a prostitute. She has heard Jesus' message. She has repented of what she's done. She's received his grace and forgiveness that she probably thought was beyond her. Now she goes to the Pharisee's house to look for an opportunity to perform a public act of thanks and worship to Jesus, to express her gratitude to the one that she loves and is grateful to. And she has with her probably the most precious thing she owns, this jar of expensive perfume. And her plan is to anoint Jesus' hands and head with it. But she sees her plan beginning to slip past as Jesus is denied the water and towel. And at that point, she's overcome. I'm going to pass on to my wife.
One of the values that I love so much about within KXC is the value of reckless generosity. And it's been captured in those beautiful words within the vision statement of recklessly giving ourselves away to God, each other, and the people of King's Cross. And I remember a number of times where we've sat down as a staff team and just wrestled with the fact of, is that reckless? Is that the right word? Because if you think about, you know, is it actually a little bit too irresponsible? Because if you think of the dictionary definition, it actually means utterly unconcerned about the consequences of some action, without caution, careless. You know, it's a bit negative, really, and that's right at the forefront of our vision statement. But reckless generosity is absolutely an accurate description of the woman's actions in this passage. If you think to the scene, Jesus is at this meal and this woman starts weeping. She is overcome, and whether that is because she sees the person of Jesus who she so loves and it has incredible gratitude for, and that draws her to tears, or whether it actually is seeing the person that she loves not receive the welcome and honour that he should. It's probably both, we don't know, but for whatever reason, she starts weeping. And Jesus is reclining at the table and she's standing over, and suddenly her tears are falling on her feet. And the thing that was absent, the thing that there had been no water in that room, no water given to him, suddenly she realizes that her tears are becoming water for the feet of Jesus. And so she bends down and she begins to wash the feet of Jesus with her own tears. And yet there's still no towel. And in that moment, she recognizes, well, maybe I can push aside social customs, push aside my own reputation, what little reputation she still has. And she unravels her hair, which in the Jewish society at the time would have actually been a divorceable offense. So not regarded well. The hair was seen as something seductive, something to seduce men. It was only kind of unraveled for the husband. And yet she unravels her hair, kneels at the feet of Jesus, and through her gratitude and her worship of him, wipes his feet with her hair. And then finally, she takes the perfume. You know, this alabaster jar that was full of expensive perfume, and she pours it out on the feet of Jesus. You know, olive oil was what was usually used for anointing, so much cheaper. There would have been another option, but she gives it all to him. And obviously this perfume probably would have been bought from her earnings, maybe as a prostitute. It would have been used previously to actually arouse men, but it probably would have been the most precious thing to her. But it's like it's laying down her old life and pouring it out on Jesus. And so in that moment, where up until that point, there would have been tension in the room, all of the eyes would have been fixed on Jesus. And yet in that moment, she enters into his humiliation and probably demeans herself so that he can be honored. And I just think that is such a beautiful picture of reckless generosity, a response of love that is so deep that she gives no thought to the consequences. She's not concerned about the opinions of others or social etiquette or even the financial cost to herself, but for the love of Jesus, she pours it out and expresses her gratitude who has forgiven her. And so when we think about our wider vision statement, we need to remember it's not an isolated action. You know, if sometimes when we just take the recklessly giving ourselves away to God, each other, and the people of the King's Cross, it gives the impression that it is something that we do. But actually, it is a response to what we have already received. In the message, verse 47, it says, she was forgiven many, many sins, and so she is very, very grateful. If the forgiveness is minimal, the gratitude is minimal. And so this scene really assumes the knowledge of a previous unwritten scene, something that is similar to so many others recorded in the Gospels, where Jesus turns a life around, where he encounters someone beyond hope, someone religiously and socially excluded, someone who feels that God is beyond reach or knowledge to them, and yet grace unexpectedly crashes in to meet them. And that one moment with Jesus changes everything. And so the woman finds herself suddenly free. that all of the sin and the regret and the shame, all of it is washed away, all of it is forgiven. Any underlying kind of disgust of herself and her past is replaced by the love and the acceptance of Jesus. And this kind of encounter, this encounter of grace, it is repeated again and again in the Gospels, and it is repeated again and again in each one of our lives. One of the beautiful things about being family together is we get to hear each other's stories. We get to hear each other's stories of what God has done in our life, where we have been confronted by grace and where God has brought transformation. And that is a beautiful thing. So reckless generosity doesn't start with us. It starts with God. His gave, you know, the gave that is in John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son. And that gave of the incarnation, where he didn't stand at a distance, but he fully entered into humanity and gave himself fully for us. Or the gave of the cross, where actually he took all of our sin and brokenness and shame upon himself, and he in return gives us his life and his righteousness, his rightness with God, so that the way is open for us to have full relationship with him. You know, that is the gospel. That is beautiful, and it is reckless. You know, it doesn't make sense that God would place himself on the line for humanity when our history is that we repeatedly get it wrong, that we repeatedly walk away from him and away from the fullness of life that he offers to us. The beauty of the recklessness of generosity of God towards us. And for those of us who have been to Newcomers Meals, and Pete has just reiterated it again tonight, we're really familiar with the story of how KXC was birthed and some of the generosity that has made KXC what it is. So if you think about the £50,000 that was anonymously donated to Pete and Bea right at the beginning of the church, if you think about Tile Yard Studios that was given rent-free so that we could have office space, if you think about York House, where Andy randomly got a phone call from Hong Kong saying, would you like free office space 5 doors up from the Ethiopian church? And for 2.5 years, we have this 15,000 square feet of office space. And the generosity of the church to give towards that, to bring, to renovate it and to pay for the service charges. But we have received, like, mind-blowingly generosity from others so that we could come to this point. My point is that we have received reckless generosity from God, and that we have been built, this church has been built on the reckless generosity of others. And what this woman shows us, and what the disciples and people throughout church history have shown us, is that the response of that is to respond with similar generosity outwards. And this is what Pete and Bea have captured in these lines in our vision statement: recklessly give ourselves away. And I guess my encouragement as we say our goodbyes is keep courageously stepping into this outward motion, this pouring out for the sake of others. One story jumps to mind. A few years ago, we had Soul in the City, and we met this amazing man called Joseph. He was an elderly man, very frail. He lived on his own in one of the flats on the Bemerton estate, and you can see photos of him up on the screen. But he had no family. He very rarely left the flat. And when we got told by the tenants' management organisation that he might be someone that would appreciate having some work done on their flat, and so I went over with a few others, and when I first saw his place, I was really shocked. I don't want to go into the details of the conditions too much that he was living in, but suffice to say that his living situation had been really badly neglected. And, he only lived a few metres from where I lived, and yet I just kind of walked in and was like, no one should be living in a place like this. There was a sheet hanging over the window, so there was no natural daylight ever entering his flat. There was his bed was practically disintegrating, and I could mention other things, but I won't. But So after discussions with social services, there was a team from here that over the Soul in the City weekend basically went in, they cleaned, they decorated. Social services got some new furniture, a new bed, a new mattress. Somebody went out and got bedding for him, went out and got pictures to hang on the wall. It was an amazing transformation. During those few days, we massively improved his living environment, which was exciting. But the thing that stands out to me most of all is it wasn't just this team of volunteers that went in and did something practical. It was also the other team of volunteers that, as Joseph left his flat, they took him and cared for him and loved him and got to know him while all of the work was being done. And so I think of, we found out that Joseph was a jazz musician. And so Guy Ricard in the Paget Centre, Joseph would sit there all day and Guy would spend hours just playing jazz piano to him. And then Lucy Clasper would sit and watch old classic black and white films with him, like Casablanca. And over those few days, this frail man that actually we'd thought, I'd slightly feared that he would be too frail to leave his flat, he just came to life. Look at him with Lucy. He just came to life. Suddenly, he was full of life. He was full of jokes. He was so animated. He would, like, from going where you had to hold him and walk slowly with him, he suddenly was, like, walking along and just on his own, enthusiastically. It was amazing seeing this man come to life. And this is reckless generosity, going above and beyond for the sake of another. And what happens as a consequence? Something of the kingdom breaks in and lives are transformed. I have chosen that one example. There are so many more in the history, in the life of this church. I could talk about Tom leading worship, spending hours on his own, in his own devotion and worship to Jesus, and coming up with these songs that become our language to express our love for God. Or for all the people that daily, over years, have prayed for this church and prayed for King's Cross. Or XLP volunteers that just week in, week out, no matter what the cost, no matter what insult they get that week, they love on the young people consistently for 7 years, and we've seen such transformation. There are so many stories within this place of people giving themselves away recklessly. And so I tell you these stories because there are opportunities in the kingdom of God that will cost you, like this woman. It will cost a little embarrassment, it'll cost you time and status. It may cost you financially. It may cost something of your reputation. But time and again, we see in the Gospels examples of people who give or sacrifice or act with courage for the sake of the kingdom. And the Bible repeatedly just tells its worth. If you think of the story in Luke 21, do you remember when Jesus points out to the disciples this woman, this widow, who gives two small coins into the temple treasury? And he says, but she, out of her poverty, put in or gave all she had to live on. You know, that's reckless generosity, throwing herself all in, not holding back, not playing it safe. And it was beautiful to Jesus. And I guess what I just wanted to say is that you are a church built on God's reckless generosity, built on the generosity of others, and you have, this is your story, this is who you are a recklessly generous church, and continue in that way. Dare to step out, dare to take risks, don't stay safe, and keep giving yourselves away for the sake of the kingdom.
So, back to the story. That's my notes. Thank you. So, having entered into Jesus' humiliation, the woman has demeaned herself in order to honor Jesus, and is now completely vulnerable in a room full of men. And there's almost that school bully kind of scenario of one person who's being picked on, and will anybody stand alongside them? And of course, Jesus does, and he says, "Simon, do you see this woman?" And I imagine Jesus, as he says that, he's not standing far off. He's sitting next to her, maybe with his hand on her shoulder. standing with her, and inside perhaps, you know, even maybe fighting off some feelings of embarrassment that she's let her hair down and you know, and worshipped him in this way. But knowing that to recoil would leave her rejected and isolated. Simon, do you see this woman? When you look at this woman, what do you see? Do you see her reputation, the labels that others would put on her? Or because I see beyond that. I see a child of God. I see the beauty of the act that she has done in worship of me. There's something incredibly powerful about seeing somebody. There's the traditional African Zulu word for hello is sawubona, and it literally means I see you. We see you. It goes beyond that. We see you. Me, my village, my ancestors, we see you. And somebody says back, Yebo Sawabono, yes, we see you. And it acknowledges people's humanity. We all want to be seen for who we are. We have a deep need to be seen, to be noticed. I really am constantly reminded by my kids that there's levels of seeing and listening. Sometimes my daughter Tia will come up to me when I'm in the middle of something or in the middle of a conversation with somebody and literally demand my attention by grabbing my arm and with all her strength leaning the other way, trying to pull me away from something. Dad, she's saying, and if she could reach my head, she'd probably be like turning my face to look at her. And what she's saying is, look at me, see me, notice me. Notice what I'm trying to show you. You know, in the moment, it's really annoying. But what she really wants is for me to stop the thing that I'm doing, interrupt the person I'm talking to crouch down maybe to her level and look in her eyes and fix my gaze on her. And for me to notice everything that she is doing, what's going on with her face when she's talking, like actually giving her my full attention. And as a dad, I really want her to know that I see her and I love her and that she's important to me. And the thing is, as adults, we kind of perhaps have too much self-awareness or embarrassment to demand people's attention in that kind of way. And we end up missing each other. I expect there's people in the room right now that if you're being really honest, you feel that you're not seen. And deep down, we all have this need to be seen and known. And that's our gift to one another. It can be so easy when you're in conversation with somebody to just see people for their usefulness to us and have a quick assessment of somebody and think, is this person going to be somebody that I want to get to know or not? Okay. But that is not the heart of God that we see in this passage in the Gospels. Seeing people is about mercy. It's about kindness. It's about seeing them for what God has put in them, spotting the gold and seeing them the way that God sees them, seeing the struggles that they go through with the kind of compassion that Jesus would have for them. Practically, it's about talking to people that you don't know here. It's about asking them about themselves, listening and being interested. It's remembering someone's name, seeing perhaps the pain in somebody's eyes and being kind to them. It's walking slowly through a room and trying to see people, and perhaps on the bus doing the same thing. You know, it's people like you, it's people not like you. It's people that you like, it's people that you have disagreements with. And what applies in these four walls on a Sunday also applies out there. And the thing I love about the story that Rachel told about Joseph was that the volunteers from KXC, the people from KXC, saw beyond the isolated older man who's becoming a bit frail and maybe was in a bit of need of some practical help, and saw the jazz musician, saw the joker, the amazing life of travel he'd lived, the regrets maybe that he had about never marrying and having a family, his passions and his struggles. The Bishop of Stepney says, London estates are the forgotten London, the bypassed, the overlooked and the ignored. Except to Jesus Christ. To him they are the places where God is especially present, the object of an extraordinary love, and the focus for justice and hope. One of the things I love about Soul in a City is that I think it's about saying, we see you to one of these kind of areas, to the Bemerton Estate. And there's a photo coming up. This is Kat Hassan. Last week, she brought her artist materials down during Soul in a City and did some portraits of residents that were out on the field. I think removing your top was strictly optional. But she also did a bunch of portraits of some of the young people on the estate. And there's another photo coming up of that. And the parents commented that they just loved that somebody had seen and noticed the beauty in their kids. And I just think that's so powerful. Every week on the XLP bus, you know, you have the guys that go out and help are seeing beyond the behavior perhaps of some of the kids and seeing their passions, their struggles, their potential, who they are. Every week at some of the other places that we have here, volunteers maybe see some beyond perhaps the practical needs, the need for a bit of food, or some of the chaotic life circumstances that people might be in, and actually say, like, we love getting to know you because you are incredibly special to God, and we want to see you as Jesus would see you. And that can be for people who are struggling, who are on the margins of society. It can be for anybody in our midst, and anybody we meet out in the street, can't it? Guy in the States that came and visited a couple of times in the early days of KXC called David Ruiz, and he led a church in Hollywood, and he had this phrase. He said, you know, the poor are not a project, the rich aren't a checkbook, and the famous aren't a photo op. In church, everybody stands on level ground, and it's so easy to see people for the outward things, isn't it? But what Jesus calls us to do is see beyond that. A few weeks ago, me and Rachel were at a party for one of her brothers and got talking to a guy called Dave. And he was an amazing man. And as we shared what we were doing in King's Cross, it transpired that Dave grew up around here probably about 50 years ago. Now, he grew up in a pretty rough family in a rough neighborhood. And before dramatically coming to faith while he was in prison, he'd been selling drugs around this area. And he described the what this area was like 50 years ago, perhaps some of the violence, the associations with the IRA and Pentonville Prison, the kind of football hooliganism that went on, just some of the other stuff around the sex industry and criminality, but then he said, the thing is, in every area, God puts something redemptive into the culture of that area. And as a church, you have to find what that is and work with it. Otherwise, you're working against the Spirit of God. And he said, in King's Cross, it's the thing of welcome and refuge. Historically, it's been a place where those who don't belong anywhere else in London can find refuge. And you've got to find a way as a church to find a way of doing church that works with that. And it immediately got me thinking of one of the pictures that's been really key to KXC all the way along. This thing of the red carpet, which was a picture that Paul Sorey had. We've got a really short clip of him telling us about it. I think it's like the final slide on there. Is it not there? Okay, well, it's a great clip, but they he basically saying he had this picture of this red carpet that Jesus, he saw being rolled out in front of the church, and people from all different walks of life were coming
in. When we first started the church,
I
had a dream. When we first started the church, I had a dream about a red carpet being rolled out from the church and onto the street, and people from all different walks of life walking onto the carpet into the church. Women who had been prostituted, the lawyer, the drug dealer, the policeman, the artist, but all of them walking in and all of them finding home.
I told you it was short. And this picture of the red carpet, it goes beyond us offering a nice selection of cakes downstairs in the cafe and a great smile from the welcome team on the door, although those things are brilliant. It goes beyond doing great food at all our events, although all of that is brilliant in terms of welcome as well. It involves seeing people. It involves accepting people, making space for people. And that requires sacrifice sometimes to accommodate others. It requires sometimes just dying to the things that we would most love to see happen and making space where everyone can exist together with dignity. And this is the story of KXC. This is who we are. And this is our prayer for the way forward, that KXC would continue to be a people that recklessly gives itself away to God, each other, and the people of King's Cross and beyond. And in doing so, that God would continue what he has so graciously started and make King's Cross new.